With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We welcome in a friend of the show, Hall of Famer, joins us each and every Wednesday. Presented by HornSolutions.net, John McClain joining us on the program. John, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
We're doing good, John. So, Deshaun Watson, let me throw this at you. Seth and I played some audio a little bit earlier in the hour from Joe Banner, who used to be the president in Cleveland and Philadelphia. He was on Ross Tucker's podcast and proposed a scenario where if the Texans are inclined to trade Deshaun Watson and maybe want to get something done before this draft, that they could do something where there are conditional picks attached to whether or not Deshaun Watson gets suspended. Could you see Nick Caserio entertaining an idea like that?
Right now, guys, I could see Nick Caserio doing anything because we don't know what his MO is because he's never been in charge. What I don't see is Philadelphia Eagles making a trade when there are still now 21 lawsuits based on what Rusty Arden just told Tom Pelissero of NFL Media. And so anything's possible. I think if a team stepped up and said before the draft that it wanted to make a deal and had a lot of contingencies, and I've never seen it. This is unprecedented in NFL history, a lot of contingencies based on when he's able to play, how much he plays, whether he plays the first year or not. That would be a possibility. That's been thrown out there by multiple people over the last two or three weeks that I've seen, but even though it's never been done, there are conditional deals. That's what they're called. You know, it's a third round. It'll be a second rounder. There's Carson Wentz has got a conditional deal that could make it number one. I remember, the Saints when they traded, Ricky Williams to Miami, it ended up being for 2 1s because he led the league in rushing, but we've never seen one that would be this expensive unless Nick Caserio just said, we want to get out from under this deal. So if he plays next season, you owe us a one. If it's the following season, you owe us the two. There would be a lot of conditions on a trade like that. But I think at this point, anything's possible, but I haven't found anybody from any team, and it doesn't mean that they're right, tell me that their team is moving into position to try to trade for Watson before he has his legal issues resolved.
This would supplant the most famous conditional trade ever made amongst quarterbacks, Ryan Mallett, for a 7th-round pick that could become a 6th-round pick based on playing time.
That was big news, yeah.
I'm glad you remember that. I'd forgotten.
Yeah. Did that become a 6th-round pick? I can't remember what the criteria were. Maybe if he just started a game or something.
Yeah, I have no idea about the ramifications of that trade. It seems like it was 30 years ago.
God, does it ever.
He was so John
Ryan Mallett.
At this point, you know, all talk of exotic conditional trades aside and what have you, for the immediate future, does it seem like the most likely scenario is going to be that Deshaun Watson doesn't go on the commissioner's exempt list until the season began, if all of this is still going on, and that for the immediate future through the spring and maybe in a training camp, the Texans just ask Deshaun not to show up, which he wasn't going to anyway, most likely, but that he's still getting paid all of his normal salary and stipends and all that?
Yeah, but right, you don't have to ask a guy not to show up who has told you 100 times he's not coming back, and right now the next time we see them on the field, there's a lot of jockeying going on right now between the union and the players about showing up for conditional drills the first 2 weeks of OTAs. That begins on the 19th. And a lot of three teams have said they're not doing it. And they're saying that they don't because of COVID-19. Well, last year, you know, teams practiced and they were able to pull off a season despite COVID-19. But so that's something that I don't think you're going to see the players. And I think a lot of them, since they're voluntary, they don't have to be there. So I don't think there's any way we're going to see Watson. And the example is when you start to get paid, that's when regular season begins. So if there still hasn't been a resolution, Watson should want to go on the exempt list so he'll be paid as opposed to holding out and losing all that money.
Well, I guess my point was that given how circumstances have changed, that maybe Watson's calculations about money have changed too, and that maybe the Texans do have to tell him not to show up. Because at this point, if Watson could just decide to go to training camp so he doesn't get fined at all and report for in the season and not be a holdout at all, and then the Texans would be in the position of having to say, well, okay, no, you got to stay home until all this legal stuff blows over.
Yeah, I think they would put that in the hands of the NFL and Roger Goodell. But I think if Watson wanted to come back and he had a change of heart and said, nope, I don't want to be traded after all, which I don't think will happen. But if he did, and then, man, that would be a whole different story. Do they let him play and come back as if nothing's happened and he's subjected to all this constantly? Or do they – I don't think – you know, they can't put him on the commissioner's list. And if they told him to stay home, he'd still have to get paid. The only thing right. that's mandatory about the off-season program right now is the mini camp in June, and training camp will start in late July. But, you know, he's still – wants to be traded. I'm guessing now he wants to be traded even more to get out of Houston. But I think just everything's going to be put on hold till we see more of what happens and in the 21 lawsuits.
John McClain joining us, presented by HornSolutions.net. John, is there a scenario that he plays another snap for the Texans ever again? And if so, what is it?
Well, if he say this was all behind him and he held out, if they decided to trade him by the trading deadline, he would have to report. Remember, Dwayne Brown came in so he could be traded, knew he was going to be traded. He played one game, and then they traded him to Seattle. That game is against Seattle. And I remember going up to him in his locker saying, I think you're going to be traded to Seattle. Too bad you couldn't just stayed up there. And he didn't want to comment about it. And then the other thing is you have to come, I think, you have to be back in December to make sure his contract didn't toll. So if he came back in December, you know, if he wants to be traded and he's running the risk of injury, which would curtail a trade, and if the Texans had a trade in mind, I don't know that they would put him out there and run the risk of injury. But I'm not going to say he'll never play another down for the Texans, because I expect, based on those two scenarios, he'll have to report at some point. I don't see him doing like Trent Williams did and sitting out the entire season and then your contract tolling and next year you make $10.5 million instead of $35 million. He doubts everything Watson does, I would imagine, is going to be to make sure he gets $35 million in 2022 when his $156 million contract kicks in.
What do you think, John? Okay, let's say everything was settled out of court, and you know how these things go. There are a lot of people that really wouldn't feel good about it, but there's going to be teams that are willing to, you know, take on a guy if everything was settled out of court. Do you think the most likely scenario is the Texans end up taking a deal before the trade deadline this year, or do they just at that point, because this would all be down after the draft, I'm talking, would it be smartest just to kick the can down the road and get maximum value before the 2022 draft?
The problem is all these teams that needed quarterbacks this year, and there were eight that had checked on them and six that were serious, and now of those six, five are going to get quarterbacks that they're going to say is their franchise quarterback. So I don't – you know, maybe one of them would say, hey, if I could get Deshaun Watson and if the trade is not too lopsided like it would have been in April, they go ahead and do it, keep their player for a year, and then trade him to another team one of those top 10 picks, trade him to another team and then stick with Watson. But I think once Watson's legal issues are behind him, yes, there will be teams that are interested. There's a lot of NFL players who've had problems off the field, including a couple like Leonard Little from the Rams, who drove drunk and killed a grandmother, did his time, came back, went to the Super Bowl, and had standing ovations. So I think at some point when it's behind him, you'll have teams interested. Right now, if you looked ahead, say to next year after this draft, say New England didn't get a quarterback. New England's going to be in the market for a quarterback. Chicago be in the market for a quarterback. And then a couple others will pop up. So there would be interest before the next draft. But there will never be a situation like now where the second, third overall picks wanted a quarterback and then others right behind them, beginning with Carolina at number 8, Denver at number 9, San Francisco at number 12, Bears at number 20, and the Patriots are in there too. I don't see, I have never thought that they would trade down in the first round beyond one of the first two teams because they wouldn't have gotten a franchise quarterback. Denver was talking about, well, we'll give him Drew Lock. No, he's not a franchise quarterback.
Yeah.
Neither is Jimmy Garoppolo. Neither is anybody on the Patriot offers. The Bears had nothing to offer, no matter what they were offering, because they had the 20th overall pick. But I didn't see Casario making a deal with the Patriots where he was for the last 20 years. But at some point, you know, they may just look and take the best offer. But there's still so long to go in this. But because it's getting close to the draft and these teams that need them are going to draft quarterbacks, I think in the top 10 on my mock drafts, I'm working on my next one as we speak, and I've got all five going in the top 10. Then it's going to be interesting to see if a guy like Kellen Mond, whose stock is going up, or Kyle Trask, maybe Davis Mills of Stanford, one of those guys slips into the bottom of the first round, or a team like Baltimore did with Lamar Jackson, trades back into the bottom half of the first round to take a quarterback everyone else had bypassed. You know, I'm interested to see if Casario, with his first pick in the third round, if one of those three quarterbacks I just mentioned is there, if he would use that top pick on a quarterback, and I'm guessing yes.
John McClain, presented by HornSolutions.net. Text question we got yesterday. I want to bounce off John McClain. As of right now, was Deshaun Watson, is he considered, was he a good pick for the Texans? We'll ask John McClain that next. John McClain joins us for his weekly visit. He's presented by HornSolutions.net. John, got a question sent to us on the text page yesterday and just asked very, very plainly and simply, and so you can evaluate this any way you want to, but it just said simply, as of now, was Deshaun Watson a good pick for the Texans?
From a football standpoint, absolutely. He was 3-3 as a rookie till he blew out his knee in practice. He came back 11-5 that season when he had a punctured lung and a broken rib and showed his physical and mental toughness by taking that carriage, a luxury coach, to Jacksonville and beat the Jaguars and play injured several games. And even though they lost to Indianapolis in the wild card round, they were 11-5. That was the best record under Bill O'Brien. And then the next year, 2019, of course, they went 10-6, won the division again, and beat Buffalo in the playoffs before blowing that 24-point lead at Kansas City. And then last year, he had his best season statistically in every category, even though it didn't translate into victories. You know, they were 3-8 in one score game. So, and he's still innocent until proven guilty. So I would say, yes, Deshaun Watson was a tremendous pick by former general manager Rick Smith. And then if they ultimately in a trade get a quarterback and players in return, no matter when it is, that helps their rebuild, then they would have gotten something for him. But I doubt they'll ever get a quarterback anytime soon who has been as good as Watson has been on the field.
I guess, yeah, that's the big question is, he's drafted in 2017. I guess if you draft a player in 2017 and 4 years later you're looking for his replacement, ultimately – I feel like that's a, yeah, obviously from a football talent evaluation standpoint, it was a good pick. But John, this is actually what I've been telling to make myself feel better about it, is that if they don't end up getting much draft compensation for him at all, just from a football standpoint, all right, this is like whiffing on a first-round pick at quarterback. You're back to square one in 2000, you know, 4 years later, and then off you go. Ultimately, it wasn't a good pick because you traded up to get a guy that you thought was going to be there for 10 years, but it just didn't work out that way.
Well, that's a good way to look at it, but these circumstances are unprecedented, and something we'll never know is, what if he did not want to be traded? What if he had never said anything at the end of when he talked to us in his last Zoom call? He was disappointed. He was in the way the season had gone, said everything he said, but ended it with he was fired up about turning things around next season. And then there'd never been any – he had not wanted to be traded. Where would he be right now? Because would the Texans still be interested in trading him? Would they have been – supportive of him? And that's something, of course, we'll never know. But a lot of quarterbacks, as you guys know, who've been picked high and up at the top, and of course he wasn't picked up at the top, Mitchell Trubisky was, and he's gone to Buffalo. And that happens quite a bit. And that's why I'm looking at these top five quarterbacks that are supposed to go in the top 10 and thinking, okay, 4 years from now, how many of them will be with the team that actually drafts them, and how many will be somewhere else? Because out of five, if they go in the top 10, I would say at least three, maybe more.
Yeah, well, if recent history is any indicator, John, a majority of them would be playing for some other team 5 years from now. That's how it's gone in the top 10 the last few years.
I think that'll be fascinating to watch. A lot of times the guys have the talent, but when they come in, and Seth, you saw this as a player, sometimes the guys come in with talent and they work hard, but the system is not good for them, or that coaching staff gets fired and they put in a different system for the player, or there's a lot of upheaval, say a quarterback coach, offensive coordinator, head coach, because of an impatient owner. You know, you'd love for a guy like Peyton Manning, who played the same system most of his career in Indianapolis, had the same coach, Tom Moore, every year there to coach him. You'd love for your quarterback to have that kind of consistency. And that's why some go on to have success later when they get up about 30 years old. But how many of these guys are going to say bomb out, but it's going to be because of the team and the situation and not because of them? You know, if you're going strictly by talent after Trevor Lawrence to Jacksonville, Kyle Pitts, tight end who's not a tight end, he's a big wide receiver for Florida, is the second highest ranked prospect, I think, on every team's board. But they're so desperate for quarterbacks that they're going to get picked higher than they really deserve. This time last year, they didn't know who's going to be the starter, Brigham Young, and turned out to be Zach Wilson. Now he's going to go second to the Jets. Next year, when the Texans have their top pick, and I believe that it will be a high pick, maybe number one pick, they need a couple of guys to do like Zach Wilson and Joe Burrow did the last 2 years, emerge as clear-cut high number one prospects.
You know, I always, John, I did always wonder with David Carr about how much of maybe the clock in his head was permanently damaged. Because quarterbacks have to have a clock in their head and kind of get into a rhythm and get a feel for how to operate in a pocket and what it's like when protection breaks down. And I'm not making excuses for him or anything, but when you're 22, 23 years old and your first 3 or 4 years, things are really imperfect, that maybe it does almost permanently alter the way that you actually function and operate in the NFL. I mean, actually, this is what I'm going to, because Sean's daughter is a neuropsychology major at Harvard. Or what is it, Sean? Is it neurology? What's she doing?
So psychology. You got it right.
Psychology?
Yeah.
Well, she's going to go into neurology. She's finding out this now as I tell her right now. Because like, men's brains don't fully develop until you're 25 or 26 years old. And I wonder if a young quarterback thrown into a bad situation like that, like never permanently is able to like genuinely develop the way other guys that are in better situations do. Because it seems like it's the chicken or the egg. You know, was the guy always going to be like that? Or was it just that he stayed like a rookie because he was never developed well? And then now, and then also some guys just suck. There's always that possibility.
Seth, let me ask you this. When I knew in October of 2000 and before the Texans' first draft that they loved David Carr and they were probably going to take him because they just fell in love with him, all of them, Charlie Casserly, Chris Palmer, the coordinator, and I guess Dom, even though Dom was at a defensive background, they just loved David. And then once I started covering a team, I used to watch after practice, you know, the quarterbacks would leave and walk across back together, and David was walking with his father. And I know they thought David wasn't a workaholic, and they wanted him to spend more time in the film room, but he wanted to go home because he was a good daddy, and he told him he had all that set up at home, and he could do the studying at home that he would have done at the facility. And so I always wondered, did the players think David worked hard enough to be a starting quarterback in the NFL early in his career?
It was never anything that impressed anybody. So I don't know. I can't remember having any conversations about that specifically, like about his actual work ethic. I do know that they treated him with kid gloves. I can remember Tony Banks saying that basically he and the other veteran quarterbacks were under strict instructions to, you know, not do any kind of hazing to David or anything, just to be sure. Not that anybody did like any really genuinely rough hazing back then, but even just kind of rookie type stuff, rookie responsibilities and everything. I don't know whether there was a lack of tough love or if I think maybe David Carr was one of the guys that should have sat for a while and should have seen how other quarterbacks prepare instead of just having it gifted to him. And that's why I don't think there's standard advice or protocol as to whether a guy should start his rookie year or not. I think everybody's different, but some guys, when it's given to them very early on, it lowers the bar for them permanently, and they just don't realize how hard it is. And if they don't have that kind of internal drive or internal motivation, they're never going to learn it. So that's where, I guess, this is my polite way of saying, like, I just don't know if David Carr ever really had that drive in him. I don't know if he ever really had that hunger the same way a Peyton Manning or a Drew Brees or one of those guys does.
Well, say they draft a quarterback in the third round, say Kellen Mond, who I think will go in a second, but say he's there at three. One of the things he's been impressing teams in the offseason, because his stock's going up, I'm like, how can a guy's stock go up? There's no private workouts. There's no taking him to dinner. There's the pro days. And I think they're skirting the issues with Justin Fields and Trey Lance because they're going to run they're going to run 49ers offense in their second pro days, which doesn't seem fair to other teams that might want them. But I think, you know, I'm not for a 3-year set like Aaron Rodgers, but the way they brought up Patrick Mahomes, having him work with Alex Smith, and Smith worked really hard to develop him. He's not one of these guys like Brett Favre or Joe Flacco or Chris Chandler was here when Steve McNair was the third overall pick. Alex Smith did a great job of working him and teaching him, you know, not just helping him like the coaches do, but about preparations and study. And the Texans didn't have anybody like that. And I think a quarterback coach who spends so much time with the player, the coordinator does too. And if the head coach has an offensive background, he's going to spend time. But that quarterback coach has got to be really good, not just for the coaching aspect, but for the psychological aspect. And if a rookie has a veteran there to help him, like, say, Kellen Mond would with Tyrod Taylor, who's going on now his 11th year and has been through some good situations in Buffalo, bad situations, losing his last two starting jobs because of injuries. And I remember last year on Hard Knocks, Anthony Lynn, the Chargers coach, was so adamant that Taylor was going to be the starter over Justin Herbert, and the way he constantly talked up Taylor, and they showed him a lot on Hard Knocks, and it was very impressive about what they thought about him. And so it seems to me like if he and Ryan Finley, who to me is, because Nick Caserio traded a pick to get him from Cincinnati, they're the set for the first two. But if a guy like Kellen Mond came in here, you know Taylor would work with him the way he did with Baker Mayfield and the way he did last year with Justin Herbert. Pep Hamilton was the quarterback coach last year. Now he's here. So a rookie, I think, would be in a good situation to watch and learn behind Taylor and with Pep Hamilton, not to mention Tim Kelly, the coordinator. I think it'd be a good situation. I don't think they would throw a rookie to the Wolves. And I'm really curious to see if a quarterback Caserio likes is available, if he will take him and just, you know, sign some more free agents. I kind of think he'll trade down for more picks, but it would still just be fascinating for everybody to have a quarterback to latch on to.
John McClain, presented by HornSolutions.net. Has Adam Sandler called John McClain to star in his movie about Sean Payton? That's next. Payne and Pendergast with you. John McClain's presented by HornSolutions.net. John, has your good, close, personal friend Adam Sandler called you to play a role in the new movie coming out about Sean Payton during the Bountygate suspension?
And Kevin James starring as Sean Payton. Now, if their intent is to get people who like Sandler's movies because they're funny and Kevin James has been in many of them, then they wouldn't have a clue about Sean Payton and wouldn't have a problem with Kevin James, who's always overweight, playing Payton, who's not overweight and is a fitness buff. And when I saw that casting immediately, I'm thinking, okay, they're not going to be doing a lot of football. You know, it's just, they're going to be doing, it's going to be I'm guessing it'll be a comedy. How many serious movies does Adam Sandler make? And he hadn't made any good ones lately. But, yeah, he might want me to be he might call at the last minute and ask me to be, you know, a fat guard or a groundskeeper,
yes!
Something like that.
Yeah.
You know, Kevin James gets in shape from time to time, but it's still, you know, relative to his body type. He's kind of gotten leaned out, but like even a really lean Kevin James isn't going to have the same body type. He looks more like an offensive lineman and I don't know what he played at Division III school. I don't know. I'm guessing he was a lineman of some type. But look, it's about when Sean Payton took that year off. Well, when he was suspended, he was coaching his kids' team. So I don't even know if it's going to be like it's based on Sean Payton, but I don't even know if they're going to even try to accurately portray everything. They might have just used that as a jumping off point or something. But
that's
you're
a good
right.
point.
Yeah, like I can't see like Kevin James. It's just that's a weird casting choice, even if it is a comedy, like if it was going to be him playing Sean Payton himself.
Hey, I just went to a celebrity lookalike website where you can put in a picture of somebody and then it spits out the celebrities they look most like. This website, John, says that they should have hired among the ones that look most like Sean Payton, according to this facial recognition software that they use, Ben Stiller. How do we think Ben Stiller would have done as Sean Payton?
Ben Stiller, I think, is like 5'5".
Okay.
And has never shown any kind of athleticism. And not that coaches, you know, if this was about Abe Gibron, and if people want to know who Abe Gibron is, Gibron, look him up on Wikipedia, because Abe Gibron, look, I don't want to insult anybody. Abe Gibron had the fattest stomach of any coach I've ever seen. And he always tucked in his shirt. Chris Farley would have been a perfect guy to play Abe Gibron. And by the way, if you put mine in there, let me know if Brad Pitt comes up.
I actually put yours in just because Seth and I were casting a movie about the Texans yesterday. And ironically, one of the ones that came up for you was a mustachioed version of James Earl Jones.
Yeah, I wish I had his voice.
I know.
I would have gone a lot farther with that voice than I have. The thing about Kevin James,
yeah,
I've seen almost every Adam Sandler movie because when I spent some time on The Longest Yard, got to know him a little bit. So I felt out of respect I should watch his movies. And if indeed it's not about football, it's him coaching his kids during his 1 year suspension. It sounds like kind of a dramedy.
Yeah.
Drama because you're suspended for a year and you don't know what you're going to do. So you coach the kids. That would be very enlightening. So I'm kind of fascinated about the whole process.
Couple of the other real quick. Zach Greinke is on the list of guys that
look like Kevin James.
They look like Sean Payton.
Oh, Zach Greinke looking like Greinke. Zach Greinke, I'm guessing not a good actor. He'd be very much a character actor, like be pigeonholed into one little niche.
Zach Greinke, Jason Bateman is on here. He would be pretty good as Sean Payton, I think. Peter Dinklage.
John.
Peter Dinklage. Yeah.
John, Sean and I are looking at some pictures of Kevin James when he was in high school. This dude is an absolute, meat wall of masculinity.
He's yoked. You know,
there's a shot of him in his wrestling, from his wrestling team. He's yoked. He's got a chiseled jaw and everything. He's got that feathered back 80s hair. I don't know. He might get leaned out for this. And maybe Sean Payton ends up feeling really pleased with the fact that maybe this does turn into more than just a comedy. Maybe this turns into Sean Payton, who I believe is still single, or did he get remarried after his last?
I think he got remarried. If you look at my high school picture, I weighed 170, ran around my shirt off all the time. You wouldn't have a clue that was right now. So maybe Sean Payton, during that year off, gained a lot of weight we don't know about. And when he came back, went on a drastic diet and health program and turned out to look exactly like he did before he began his suspension.
John, you don't have to tell me the dollar amount, but just how many royalty checks show up in the McLean mailbox every month for your various roles that you've been in?
Well, not as many as should, and I probably should go to the Screenwriters Guild and point out all the ones I'm missing. But the last one I got was, I believe, from Spring Breakers, and it was for $38.
Nice.
And as someone who had a speaking part in there, I've gotten more of that from The Longest Yard, where I had one line. And so I think something's out of kilter. But the most I've ever gotten, I think, was $60 one time for, I can't even remember which one it was. And I thought, wow, I'm rich.
Yeah.
And I know what it was. It was The Longest Yard, and I got $60 in change. And I thought, okay, let's see, if I'm getting that, what is Adam Sandler getting for that? And the other thing was, one time I got one for 99 cents, and I was embarrassed to cash it, so I thought I'd frame it, put it on the wall, but I've lost it.
Yeah, then you know what you did? You screwed up the accounting somewhere.
No kidding.
Some big-time movie studio was like, "Wait, balance the books, Marge! Damn it, Marge! Why can't you ever balance the books?" And then poor Marge is out on her ass because John McClane couldn't be troubled to cash a 99 cent.
Marge was always off by 99 cents.
Old Moneybags McClane doesn't give a damn about Marge.
Moneybags. John McClane presented by HornSolutions.net. John, when you see the, and I don't know if you saw any of this, if it came across your Twitter timeline at all, but Julian Edelman retiring earlier this week. Where do you come? Oh, I know you saw the news. Where do you come out on the discussion of Julian Edelman as a Hall of Famer?
Well, I can't even believe there's a discussion. Like LeSean McCoy today came out and said, well, he's not, but I am. And when I think of those two guys, I don't think of Hall of Fame players. To me, at a point when a player retires, if you can put him in a Hall of Fame conversation, he's got to be pretty much a no-brainer, and Edelman's not. But through the years, I think I've done this 28 years, been on the committee, I've tried to keep an open mind about everyone and the guy that is presenting them. And Edelman, everything you do about Edelman that I would do if I was presenting him, and today you have access to all this information. You know, how many catches did he make in his career that were big? First downs, the bigger the game, the opponent. How many were not good throws by Brady, like that great one he made here against Atlanta? That had nothing to do with Brady and everything to do with him. And you've got to offset the fact he never went to a Pro Bowl, and he's runner 58th in receiving yards now. And 5 years from now, he might be 258 since they're adding another game. And I would keep an open mind about everyone, as I always do. I was called by the Boston Globe yesterday, and I told them that. I try to keep an open mind on everyone, but right away, obviously, he's a no-brainer. And so it'd be up. We'll see in 5 years, and we'll see how much people lobby for him. And I would assume in 5 years, if Tom Brady is not still playing, we on the committee, if I'm still on the committee, would be hearing from a lot of people like Bill Belichick and Tom Brady about his candidacy.
Hey, you know what? It makes me think. Was it Mike Messina that got in? to the Hall of Fame, and people basically said, like, well, you know, without sabermetrics and advanced analytics, Mike Messina wasn't going to make the Hall of Fame. But when you go back and look at his career and you look at everything and how it plays out with modern stats, wow, yeah. Like, he didn't match up via ERA or anything else, but you could see now with the stats how much more valuable he is. Oh, I'm not saying this happens with Edelman, but I'm curious, John, because you brought up, okay, how many big-time first plays or big-time catches or game-winning catches did he have? Like, are you starting to see that more in some of the arguments for football players, the stuff that's above and beyond the normal stats or metrics when it comes to people making their arguments?
I'll give you an example of a guy, and this was before we started talking about analytics. People have always come in loaded with statistics, and a lot of them go beyond Pro Bowls and yards and catch. And a great example was Dan Hampton from the Chicago Bears. Dan was a defensive tackle, sometimes defensive end, and he hadn't gotten in. And the guy that presented him, he was a finalist again, Don Pearson, retired from the Chicago Tribune, one of the all-time great NFL writers. Don came in with a lot of stats about the Bears defense, which was great, an all-timer. But when Hampton had missed games over a period of years and was not able to play because of injuries, and there weren't a lot, but there were some, how the statistics dropped against the run, against the pass, in yards and everything else, they were not as good. And then he had Mike Singletary, their middle linebacker, explaining exactly why that was. What did Hampton mean to that defense, not just for the line, but the linebackers and the DBs when he was in, and what happened when he wasn't? And that changed my mind, and I voted for him.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah, I'm just going to – because, you know, with because Mike Messina, just real quick, Sean.
Yeah.
Mike Messina, from pitchers who, with at least 1,000 innings, ranks 585th all-time in ERA.
Yeah.
So, like, it's not like all the other guys – like, it's not like the guy at 584 and 586 is, like, waiting to get into the Hall of Fame either. It was all the other things above and beyond that you can start to parse out with his contributions. I don't think Edelman's the guy to do it, but I do wonder if I – maybe sometimes we worry. I don't even like – even though I don't think Edelman's a Hall of Famer, I don't like seeing – total career yardage being used as an argument for or against a wide receiver, because it goes way beyond stuff like that.
One of the things I'll use on Andre Johnson is when he retired, there were several key statistics. It was Jerry Rice and Andre Johnson, or Marvin Harrison and Andre Johnson. And then I will use, unlike Marvin Harrison, who played every year but one with Peyton Manning, and then Jerry Rice, of course, played with two Hall of Fame quarterbacks, here's who Andre Johnson played with. It's like that should be a factor.
John McClain is presented by HornSolutions.net each and every week. John, what's going on in the Chronicle this weekend?
I'm working right now my third mock draft for Texas Sports Nation. I have a column today in the Chronicle about the Texans defense. Plan to have columns this week, and one on Sunday about the team in the draft. Wrote one that's on Texas Sports Nation about could Nick Caserio take a quarterback. And I think in this mock draft, the others I've had a corner, I think I'm going to put Kellen Mond in there because I like to make him different. My official one is the Thursday before the draft. Thank you guys very much, as always. I do appreciate it. And so have a great rest of the week.
Thanks, John. We appreciate it. We'll keep an eye out for all that good stuff. Draft is 2 weeks from tomorrow, so it's coming up pretty quick. All right, we head into the 9 o'clock hour. There is some news along the Deshaun Watson litigation front that we will get you updated on, and all the back and forth from the two attorneys last night. What does it all mean as we head into what could be some trials, could be some settlements? We'll debate and discuss next.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.